Save big on brunch for mom, all in the Kroger app. Buy one, get one free on flavorful fresh Tyson chicken during our full line sale. Then mix or match during our 99 cent sale and get Kraft mac and cheese, Campbell's soup, or Bar S Franks for 99 cents each when you buy five or more, all with your card. Shop these deals at your local Kroger today, or tap the screen now to download the Kroger app to save big today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Prices and product availability subject to change. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Welcome to episode 385 of The Lab. I'm Brad Barton.
I'm Phil Barton.
This is one in our continuing series on microbes and microbiology. If you'd like to hear the other episodes, you can find them by visiting thelabwithbrad.com.
Fancy.
Hi, I know. I'm all excited.
Schnazzy, even.
Let's not forget your show.
Okay.
Phil's show, episode 1, which you can find by visiting brothersbarton.net.
That's right.
Also, if you want to check out any of our ongoing experiments, you can go to patreon.com/thelabwithbrad.
Cool.
In fact, I just got some new toys for the next round of experiments.
So they're here. Okay.
It's going to be fun. But enough of that. Let us do a tale of two plants.
Two plants, okay.
And we're going to start
alike
with...
never mind.
We're going to start with tulips.
Okay. Tulips. Alike in... I don't know the quote.
Anyway. Right? Yeah. In the 1700s, mid-1700s, starting in 1634... and peaking and then popping.
Okay.
In 1637.
Okay.
There was a tulip mania.
In
the Netherlands.
Okay, yeah.
Everybody got real excited about tulips, especially what they called broken tulips.
Okay.
Now, the flower looks fine. It's not like somebody runs along the field and goes crack, 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 crack.
Bend over.
What they meant is that the color was broken.
Oh.
And you'd get stripes and really startling sort of feathery or even flame-like patterns.
Okay.
Now, those were considered very pretty and the most valuable.
Okay.
But they weren't certain how they were happening.
Yeah, right?
Yeah, okay. So they figured it was probably something wrong with the plant.
Hence the broken tulip.
So
okay.
a lot of growers tried a lot of different things, like more or less fertilizer, different temperatures, different depths to put the bulbs or seeds down.
Right, right.
Especially considering that any flower that did show the broken coloring pattern, the bulbs it would make would tend to be small or too soft, and within a couple of generations, that's the end of that flower.
That sounds like poisoning or
something's
wrong. Disease.
Yes. So what they found is they could take a bud and graft it onto another flower and then get the broken blossoms.
Oh, okay.
So people were very excited about that all the way up until 1637 when the whole bubble burst.
Made all these valuable flowers.
at the peak, like a skilled workman would get around 300 florins or guilders a year. Whereas these flowers were going from 3,000 to 4,000 at a time.
Oh, crap.
So like 10 years of wages and more for a single bulb.
Well, sounds good, right? Yeah.
Yeah, except, you know, until it wasn't.
Did people move on to the banana? What happened?
Anyway, even after the bubble burst and everybody was no longer quite so excited by tulips, they still didn't know what made a broken flower.
Right, they had a procedure, but...
Yes, it would take actually hundreds of years to find out what was going on.
Hmm.
But before we get to that,
we
need to squeeze in something about antibiotics.
Okay.
Which we did on Monday. Our sponsors include Hot Foot Cold Feet and your local podiatrist.
You need one. I mean,
after all of that, with your feet,
they're going to get sick.
They're going to get sick. It's funny you should mention that, getting sick and all.
Yeah.
We're talking about viruses. We're starting to talk about viruses in this episode, but I thought I'd squeeze in something about antibiotics.
Oh, okay.
Because they were an important development.
Mm-hmm.
The term actually originally meant substances produced by microbes that messed with other microbes.
Oh, okay.
But nowadays they kind of use it generically. But if you want to get technical, there's antimicrobial, there's antifungal, there's antibacterial, uh-huh. there's antiviral.
The anti-life.
Yes, but you took Biology 101.
I certainly did.
Did you ever have to stain your samples?
Stain my samples? No, no.
Really?
I made a genetically modified organism once, and it glowed if you put a black light on it.
Right.
Does that?
But, I mean, did you ever look through your cheapy microscope and look at any of the critters?
No, no. Well, yes, but they weren't, we weren't preparing. It was like...
Came out of an envelope or something. Okay, well, often...
There were stains.
You need to stain your sample in order to see the little critter.
Mm-hmm.
So, back in Frankfurt, Germany, mm-hmm. in the late 1900s, in the late 1800s,
yeah.
I can talk.
Pretty sure I just
Paul Ehrlich,
yeah.
Yeah, he got to thinking. He noticed there's stains that will stain animal or human cells and some bacteria,
mm-hmm.
but not others. And there are other stains that won't stain animal or human cells. Human bacteria.
Human, why not?
Tiny people.
Well, when are we getting political here?
Yeah, they wouldn't stain human or animal cells, but would stain bacteria.
Okay.
So it occurred to him that maybe we could use this sort of effect to make a drug that would target bacteria
and
be toxic to them without touching human cells.
Sounds good.
So by 1907, he'd found his first clinically useful substance.
Mm-hmm.
So good for him. And then he was joined by a Japanese researcher.
Okay.
Atachiro Hada.
Okay.
I apologize to the entire nation of Japan.
Right?
This was still happening in Germany.
Okay.
And they decided they were going to use this same technique to try and stop syphilis.
Oh, cool.
Which is a disease caused by a bacterium.
Mm-hmm.
Well, actually, lots of them at once.
Oh, right.
They eventually found in 1910 something they called Compound 606.
Ooh.
Because it was the 606th thing they tried.
Oh, goodness, six.
They persevered, though.
Yeah, tenacity.
That was the first effective treatment for syphilis, and thank you, guys.
Right. Well, what if they'd stopped at 605?
That was all on purpose.
Okay.
Then there was St. Mary's Hospital in London,
ooh.
Where a fellow named a Scottish physician, Alexander Fleming, sort of stumbled into something.
Uh-huh.
Some Irish researchers had discovered that you could take bacteria from pus,
ooh.
And when they cultured it, they actually saw several different lines of bacteria developing.
Weird.
Which was odd.
Right.
So he thought he'd go ahead and recreate the experiment and characterize and describe the different strains he would get.
Mm-hmm.
That was all working. He was planning to publish a paper in 1928 about it.
Yeah.
But then he went on vacation.
That's right. Okay.
In August of 1928, he went to his vacation home in Barton Mills.
Really?
Yeah. Barton.
We're in this history somewhere.
Now, he'd taken a bunch of bacteria and put it in the dishes and set them on the side of the table so that they wouldn't be hit by direct sunlight and they'd be out of the way of his partner who could keep working while he was on vacation.
Sound good.
So he was appointed to the head of a department at St. Mary's on September 1st, but he didn't get there to accept the appointment until September 3rd.
Mm-hmm.
And at that time, he swung by the lab and took a look at these dishes.
Mm-hmm.
And found that one of them hadn't actually been closed properly.
Oh, crap.
Oh, dear.
Yeah.
But when he looked at it, there was a blue-green algae in there.
Okay.
And the bacteria wouldn't grow when they were close to the algae. Hey. Far away from the algae, you were still getting bacteria.
Yeah.
And he's quoted as saying, "That's funny."
Why did they bother?
The historical quote, right?
Yeah. How profound.
So he took a picture of the dish and samples of the mold and preserved the whole thing in formaldehyde.
Oh, okay.
And then he went back to vacation.
Okay.
Good times.
Yeah.
So he comes back and he cultures this mold.
Mm-hmm.
And he developed a method of getting the juice out of it.
Oh, okay.
And discovered that, actually, it kills lots of bacteria.
Oh, hey.
The mold was called penicillium,
mm-hmm.
so he named it penicillin.
Aha.
Because he was tired of saying the filtered broth of a microbial culture. Now, Fleming was not really up on his chemistry. He did have a couple of people come and help him try to isolate the actual chemical.
Right.
But it never did work, and he stopped working on it in 1929.
Hmm.
Then, in 1939,
okay.
at the University of Oxford, it was led by Howard Florey.
Sure.
Sure. And included people like Edward Abraham. That's a nice, easy to pronounce name. Ernest Chain. North Helian, and Margaret Jennings.
Oh, goodness. Okay.
Okay. You got, that was hard to do. They managed to isolate the actual chemical.
Hey.
And then they started doing clinical trials with various critters
mm-hmm.
and eventually moved on to humans.
Oh, hey.
Now, it took a while, but the United States Army, various major corporations, Pfizer, in fact,
yeah.
After the owner's daughter died of an infection, oof. Got very interested in producing it. At the time, what they did was they produced various acids and chemicals
oh.
for research.
Yeah.
This was their first foray into medicine and microbiology.
Uh-huh.
But they developed a way to make lots of penicillin relatively cheaply.
Okay.
So good job, guys.
Yeah.
So Fleming, Florey, and Chain shared the 1945 Nobel Prize in Medicine and Physiology.
Cool.
For their discovery of and development of penicillin.
Nice.
So, that's our nod to antibiotics.
I feel healthier already.
What temperature are your feet? When you are studying bacteria,
yes,
you might want to have some way to filter them out.
Oh, okay, yes.
So, Charles Chamberlain,
okay,
who was working with Louis Pasteur, or Louis Pasteur,
mm-hmm.
made a filter
well, go,
out
good.
Of unglazed porcelain. And you could force the water through the tiny pores, and none of the bacteria would get through.
Oh, gotcha. Oh, yeah.
At first, just for the lab, and other lab people used it, but later on, people were using these at home in order to filter their water.
Oh.
But this thing came in handy when they started looking at tobacco mosaic disease.
Oof, goodness. Okay.
Now, this might sound a little familiar.
No.
It's a disease. Well, it will in a moment here. It's all a right. disease. It doesn't kill the tobacco plant, but it does make the colors kind of funny.
Aha!
On the leaves, you'd get splotches of different hues of green or even yellow and brown.
Ah, you had gremlins out there grafting yes. them and stuff. Yeah.
Unfortunately, nobody buys tobacco because it's pretty.
So who cares? Yeah.
And it also tended to make stunted, wrinkly and curled up leaves.
Oh, yeah.
So the yield for a given size of land was getting smaller.
Oh, they do care. Okay,
yes. they
yes.
do care, but in exactly the opposite way.
Right. Stop it.
A scientist, we're back in Holland, actually, the Netherlands,
mm-hmm.
a director of the Agricultural Experimental Station in Waggakanchen, Holland.
Holy crap.
Yeah, I know. He discovered that you could take the juice from mosaic leaves
uh-huh.
and squirt it into non-mosaic leaves, and then the tobacco would get the same issues.
Ooh, okay.
Right? But
yes.
more than that, he shoved it through one of these Chamberlain filters,
uh-huh.
also called Pasteur Chamberlain filters.
Cool.
And then, you know, you could look at the juice. There's nothing you can see in there, but you could still infect tobacco plants with it.
Aha!
So what's going on there?
You're right.
He decided, well, some sort of bacteria that just goes inactive when you filter it?
Yeah,
just swinging a miss. In 1892,
uh-huh.
a Russian scientist discovered the same thing.
Okay.
Something that you could filter this stuff and not see it, but it was still infecting plants.
What the heck?
He also concluded, I don't know, some kind of bacterium that we can't see. That
are they going to say tiny? Somebody say tiny.
In 1898, Martinus Sedrin
okay.
discovered that you could take this filterable juice and you could actually make more infectious agent when you put it into leaves. So you couldn't culture it on a petri dish,
okay,
but you could get it to grow inside of plants.
Aha.
And he still didn't know what to call it, so he borrowed a Latin word for disease and called it a filterable virus.
Okay.
Coined the term.
Yes. They don't even know what it is yet. Okay.
That's how we discovered viruses. And a tale of two plants. Strangely, though, it wasn't until 1928 that Dorothy Cayley was able to demonstrate conclusively that the reason you get broken tulips was because of a virus.
Nice. Wait, an actual virus, or is she still on the juice?
Well, it was 1928. Yeah. By then, the idea that there was a virus was pretty well established.
Okay.
Although we didn't actually get to see viruses until the 1930s, when the first electron microscopes were invented.
Ah, yes. Okay.
Mind you, viruses, most of them are very tiny, but there are some that are huge, that are even bigger than the smaller bacteria.
Huh.
But, you know, we wouldn't find out about that for a long time either. And between, you know, the first time somebody called it a virus and Dorothy came along to go, hey, that's what's happening to the tulips.
You remember those guys? Hello?
We also found viruses that were infecting animals and humans.
Aha.
But we'll talk about that next time. See you then.
Bye.
Brunch for mom, all in the Kroger app. Buy one, get one free on flavorful fresh Tyson chicken during our full line sale. Then mix or match during our 99 cent sale and get Kraft mac and cheese, Campbell's soup, or Bar S Franks for 99 cents each when you buy five or more, all with your card. Shop these deals at your local Kroger today, or tap the screen now to download the Kroger app to save big today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Prices and product availability subject to change. Restrictions apply. See site for details.